Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with host Dr. Gloria Horsley, marriage and family therapist, author, and international expert in the area of grief and loss. Tune in and hear bereaved parents and siblings share their stories of loss, hope, and renewal. You will learn what they have done to cope, how they have established a new normal in their lives, and how they have gone on to do fantastic things. Dr. Gloria dedicates this show to her deceased son, Scott, and to all of the parents and other family members who have lost loved ones before their time. And now, with Healing the Grieving Heart, here's your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley.
Hello, I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley. Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart. Our show today is on a very difficult topic, the murder of a child. Now, I've had a child die in an automobile accident, but I've never had a child die having a child murdered. But my father was chief of police while I was growing up in my small town, and he then became United States Marshal of Utah. So I have met murderers, I've attended trials, but one of the things that I never did was follow a bereaved family. And I believe that talking to families of those who have been subjected to this most heinous crime, one of a human being taking the life of another, is a rare privilege. To hear how in the worst of circumstances it's possible to find hope, forgiveness, and even healing. According to FBI statistics, over 18,000 people are murdered every year. The majority of the victims are male, as are 90% of the offenders. When someone you love has been murdered or killed by a drunk or reckless driver or medical malpractice, it is an understatement to say that your life has been changed. My friends tell me that their anger, pain, and even desire for revenge are often deep. While my son died in minutes, as did the driver of the car, families of murdered children can be subjected to years of uncertainty and hassle with the legal system. Each of us is unique and special, as are our stories, relationships, and responses to loss. Healing the grieving heart is about nourishing the heart and removing the blocks that slow the miracle of renewal. Have hope. My guest and I are here to tell you that the heart can heal even after the tragic death of a child, even to homicide. You may think you will never be able to function again, but you will survive, live, and even thrive. We did it, and so can you. You can love, open your heart, and be happy again. Please join us on our show by calling our toll-free number 1-866-369-3742 or emailing me at gchorsley@aol.com with questions or comments regarding the losses in your life. On the show today, I'm very honored to have my very special guest, Dr. Richard Dew. Dr. Dew is a physician, poet, author of Brad, We Hardly Knew You, Rachel's Cry, and his latest book and novel titled Tunnel of Light. Dr. Dew is from Knoxville, Tennessee, and he's here today as Brad's dad to share his journey of survival after Brad's murder. Good morning, Dr. Dew, and welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Can I call you Richard?
That'll be fine.
Now, I understand that in 1992, your son Brad was murdered.
Yes.
Could you tell our listeners about him and about how he died?
Brad, as we all think, was a very outstanding kid. He had just finished his junior year at Millsaps College in Jackson, Mississippi. He had been selected an all-conference linebacker and just been selected to Phi Beta Kappa. He had decided to stay there and work for the summer, and early on the morning of June 7th, he was returning home from work. There were two young men who, for reasons known only to them, had decided that they were going to murder the next person who came down the street. They did not know Brad. There was no previous connection. Unfortunately, that next person was Brad. They chased him through the streets of Jackson, taking turns shooting at him, until finally he was killed instantly by a single shot.
Wow.
He was 21 years old.
Hmm. And tell us, how did you find out about his death?
That was probably the most insensitive thing that happened during the time. I got a phone call from the local police department. I was on call at the hospital that night, and they said, "Is this Dr. Dew?" And I said, "Yes," expecting this to be a call from a patient or the hospital. And they said, "Well, this is the Oliver Springs Police Department. You need to call the Jackson, Mississippi Police Department concerning a fatal accident involving Brad Dew."
Wow. And then you had to tell your wife?
Yeah, I had to tell my wife, and then, you know, the usual things after the death of a child.
Did you call her or see her?
No. She was, I sleep in the other room when I'm on call, so I don't wake her up. So I got as many details as I could. This was 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And so then I had to go wake her up and tell her that Brad had been killed.
Mm-hmm. Wow, what a thing for both of you. So could you talk a little bit more about, then how did things go after that? You went down and saw the, identified the body?
Yeah, we were fortunate, just in that the justice system worked fine for us. Is they foul up right at first. We were told Brad was killed in a car wreck. And that's what we had told all of our friends until 4:30 that afternoon.
Oh my goodness, that's what they told you on the phone, or?
Yeah, well, they thought he had.
Oh.
He had run into a house going 80 miles an hour.
Oh, he was driving, okay.
He was driving his truck, yeah.
Okay.
And, so then we got a phone call that afternoon from some of his friends who had gone down to get his, possessions out of his truck at the impound yard and says, "Doctor, do something's wrong. This car is full of bullet holes." And so I called back, and then they discovered, they did an autopsy and found out he actually had been shot rather than died in a car wreck. But beyond that is the police department worked fine. They solved the crime in less than 2 weeks, which was totally unwitnessed, and we had a real positive relationship.
How did they go about doing that?
Well, one of the people who had killed him murdered someone else 6 days later. And had been wounded in a gunfight, really. And when they were investigating that murder, they found out that these two fellows had been bragging around town about killing my son. And so that led them to him.
Now, thinking that he died in an automobile accident and then finding out he was murdered, was there any disconnect in that for you?
Well, there was a disconnect once we knew he was dead. And so... You know, it did cause further problems because you immediately start wondering, well, why, what happened? And we had no answers for 2 weeks. But I think that however your child dies, as most children die suddenly, you know, either in accidents or by suicide or homicides. And so there's, you kind of go on automatic pilot immediately. You're stunned, and I walk around in a daze for probably a week or 10 days.
And you're a person who had been with families who had dying children.
Well, that, and I was a physician in Vietnam with the Marines, and I'd seen a lot of young men die, but they weren't my young men.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? I worked as a psychiatric nursing consultant and taught at the University of Rochester, and I worked with a lot of families on the surgical service, and I always would say to them, well, I think I can, you know, give you some help, but I don't know exactly what you're going through. And, wow, when it happens to you...
It's totally different.
It is. I mean, you see yourself doing what you've talked about.
Right, right.
But you can't stop doing it.
Yeah, but again, as I said, I was on pretty much automatic pilot for a while there.
Yeah, how long did it take you to go back to work?
I went back to work about 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
I was concerned because I was preoccupied, and so I had my partners review all my charts for 3 months, really, to be sure I wasn't doing any dumb things medically.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a rule that I did not want my patients mentioning Brad's name because I would break down.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, we talk about whether or not people should talk about the child's name or whatever, but in some circumstances, it'd be a good idea not to talk about
him. Yeah, I love to talk about him as soon as I got out of the office, but I just, I really could not handle people's medical problem while I was having them console me.
Right, right. And I think one of the things that we're going to get on it in a little later is, which I think is very interesting, the way you've compartmentalized to be able to deal with your own grief.
Right.
And give yourself that permission to do that.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit more about how the boys got arrested? Did you meet them? You know, how did the trial go?
Okay. Well, they were arrested and really never left jail after that. The trials were, it took about a year to get to the trials. They were about 2 months apart. They were both convicted of first-degree murder. And I was being very noble. I was going to say the police don't give them the death penalty, and then found out in Mississippi that first-degree murder means that you come up for parole in 10 years. And so for the last four years, we've been going down every 18 months for parole hearings now.
Wow. Now how is that for you?
It was bad, the first one. After that, it's just something you do. And what I tell people when I'm talking to other parents whose children have been murdered is you really have to almost become slightly schizophrenic. Is you deal with the justice system when you have to deal with it. You take it out. I call it putting it in a pigeonhole. I pigeonhole it until something comes up I have to do. I take it out. I do it. Then I put it back in the pigeonhole and don't let it dominate my whole life.
Mm-hmm. Now, is your wife able to do that?
Probably not as well. Mm-hmm. She doesn't talk about it very much, but it's much more trying on her when we have to go back for these hearings than on me.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you sat through both trials?
Yes.
And did you go to all of the sessions?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We sat through both of them, and that's tough.
Yeah.
Mainly because the defense attorneys try to make their people look as good as they can and try to find reasons for the unthinkable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, do you feel like too much focus was placed on the perpetrator and not enough on the family's loss, or
not in our case? Yeah,
I know, talk about it.
There have been cases, you know, people I know who have had this, but in our case, I thought that the district attorney, they told us everything they were going to do, and this, since this was such a senseless crime, you know, you worry about, is there going to be a technicality or something like that? But it did not happen here. So in our case, no, it was not a problem.
Now, you talked about the legal system being quicksand, struggling with quicksand.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times for many parents it is, because they get so tied up in it that they put their grief on hold. And they don't really deal with their grief. They're so tied up, they get into the victim's rights movement. And I didn't do that purposely, because I felt like with my personality, I would become like a dog with a bone and I wouldn't turn loose of it. And I've seen parents who've done that. And 5-6 years later, they're still just these very, very angry people. And every injustice they see just makes them more angry. And I didn't want to be like that.
Mm-hmm. So they're in jail, and you go down there, what, once a year?
Every 18 months.
Do you have any thoughts about, there were two of them, do you have any difference in thinking about the two, or have you ever talked to them? Or?
I have talked briefly with one. Is the thing that bothered me most is it would have helped me more than anything else if I'd have gotten just a note, or at any point if it said, I'm really sorry I did this. But to this day, we haven't heard so much as a sorry about that.
I know my friend's husband was killed by a driver, and the kid finally got a hold of my friend years later and said, I want to tell you I'm sorry. My lawyers would not let me do that.
Yeah.
And he finally said, I have decided to do it. I don't care.
That may be the case here. I give a lot of talks, and I talk at churches, and the first question they always ask me is, have you forgiven these people? And to the extent that I don't ruminate on it, I don't wish them ill, I guess maybe I have. I think probably the most honest way of saying is I don't really hate them anymore.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up on a break now, so please stay tuned to hear more from bereaved parent Dr. Richard Du on how he's dealt with the murder of his son, Brad. And when we get back, Dr. Du, I would like to just run over some of the points about the legal system, what people go through, and then I'd like to move on to talking more about how it's been for your family and the ways that you've coped with the loss of your child.
That sounds good.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you happy with your health? Do you feel that conventional medicine doesn't work for you? Migrate yourself from everyday healthcare to the holistic health lifestyle by tuning into the Holistic Health Hotline with Raina Ganji, Thursdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on Voice America Health and Wellness. It's the show that'll take you on a journey every week through the various modalities comprising the true holistic approach to health and wellness. Topics will range from reflexology and body balancing to menopause and male dysfunction. Issues will be covered from both Native American and global perspectives. You'll also learn more about how your body, mind, and spirit relate to our universal connection. So join us Thursdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for the Holistic Health Hotline with Raina Ganji, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
We all want to improve the environment, but not all of us are willing to make radical changes in our lifestyle to help. If you're one of the millions of people who want to change the world without changing your life, tune in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time for The Lazy Environmentalist with Josh Dorfman. The Lazy Environmentalist is about easily and effortlessly greening our modern lifestyles without ever sacrificing style. Host Josh Dorfman will bring together designers, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who are rapidly making the modern green lifestyle a reality. So help your world and help yourself by listening to The Lazy Environmentalist with Josh Dorfman every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffered the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria, and my guest today is Dr. Richard Due, whose son Brad was murdered in 1992. Dr. Due is a physician, poet, author of Brad, We Hardly Knew You, Rachel's Cry, and The Tunnel of Light, A Story of Love and Loss. If you would like to join our show with comments for me or Dr. Due, please call our toll-free number at 1-866-369-3742. Or if you would like to email me, my email is gchorsley@aol.com. In order to get Richard's books, you can go to www.dubooks.com. Is that right, Dr. Due?
Yes, it's D-E-W. A lot of people don't know how to spell it.
Oh, good, D-E-W. All right, before break, we were discussing your son Brad's murder and how he was driving his truck down the street, for listeners who haven't tuned in yet, and he was shot by two guys who just went out to kill the next person they saw. And two perpetrators are in prison right now, and you go, what, yearly to make sure they stay there?
Yeah, we go every 18 months. It's sort of staggered, so it winds up about once a year.
Because life in prison is only 10 years in
Mississippi, yes.
Wow. Well, one of the things we don't want to, Dr. Due, Richard and I have decided we don't want to dwell too long on the legal system on the show, but I did want to read you what families go through. On the Internet, there's a brief, Survivors of Homicide Incorporated, and it's put out by the Orange County Sheriff's Office and Brief Survivors of Homicide of the State of Florida, and it just has a rundown for people on what they might expect, and I was just kind of amazed at the list. The apprehension and arrest of the accused, bail bonds, state attorney investigation, impact statement, deposition, arraignment, pretrial intervention, pretrial conference, the trial, pre-sentencing investigation, and now Rich has had the trial, and now it is, the hearings to try to be released from prison, right?
Right, the parole hearings.
The parole hearings, that's the word I wanted, that he's going through, so quite a process, I would say. Richard, how do families get through that, and how did you?
You just do it. You just like any people say, I don't know how you survive your child. I don't know what I'd do if my child was killed. Well, you don't have any choice. You just do what has to be done.
Mm-hmm. And do families keep going? Will you keep going every 18 months?
Yeah. Yeah, that's just one of those things. In a way, I would like to stop doing that, but on the other hand, it would almost seem like you were being unloyal to Brad.
Mm-hmm. Can you divide it up with family members, or is it necessary for the parents to be there?
It's really better for the parents. It just has more impact.
Mm-hmm. Did they have you make an impact statement?
Made one at the trials, and then you can make a statement to the parole board each time.
Did you have somebody support you when you were doing that to word it? And were there people that were kind of with you?
There were people. We did our own. We did not ask for anyone to tell us what to say. We just wrote our own impact statements and were able to deliver those. The most helpful person in a situation like this is most cities have a victim's rights advocate. And that's their job is to help you. And she went to all the trials with us. She told us what was coming up. And she relayed questions back and forth to the district attorney when, you know, we didn't want to bother them. And one of the things I think parents have to be careful about is not being a pest, because if you are, then they just turn you off and you have no voice at all. So we worked through the victim's rights advocate, and we had a very good one. One of the people in her office, her son had been murdered shortly before, so they were very sensitized to it.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about being a pest and sensitized, I understand that one of the problems can be that they're so overwhelmed with crime that sometimes they become a little insensitive in the legal system.
The thing I think that we have to remember is that when someone is murdered, it is not a crime against us, it's a crime against the state. And so they are interested in getting their job done, trying to get a conviction, the same things we're interested in, but they are overwhelmed.
And for them, it's a business.
They just don't have time to talk to you. Yeah, and, you know, it's like many doctors who say they don't have time to talk.
Uh-huh. Now, could you talk to us a little bit about what you see as the points that are different about the death of children from other causes as opposed to murder? Because I know that in my experience, there's a huge amount of anger, you know, connected with murder.
Yeah, I think that the thing that is first and foremost is that it's intentional. If someone's in an auto accident, as we know they happen, it hurts when it happens, they get an illness. But in this case, someone we know nothing about decided that our child did not deserve to live and proceeded to kill him. And that's hard to incorporate into any belief system. And most of the things, you know, we think that life is sacred, and this violates one of our basic premises of life.
Mm-hmm.
We also, in these cases, we were never with our children, and we always worry is that the two things that parents worry most about in a violent death is, were they frightened, and did they
mm-hmm.
hurt? And
mm-hmm.
We don't know. So we spend a lot of time replaying imaginary scenarios in our heads. I think those are the two major things that are different. And then if you get involved in it, the media can be a real problem sometimes, because if you notice, they always want to know when you're going after the trial. Are you going to have closure?
As someone said, closures are for bank accounts, not for
right.
accounts.
And so, but you know, the media is a two-edged sword. Like the justice system is, if you're logical and think it out, you can use the media for your benefit too. And we did that,
mm-hmm.
and we were very pleased with our media coverage.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, because I think media does get a tougher app sometimes.
Right, and then you know, the other things you mentioned that are different and are tough is at the trial, where you hear what wonderful people the murderers were, and then they somehow try to twist it around where your child deserved to die.
Right, and when he was just driving down the street, it's
right.
pretty hard.
And then, you know, just entering evidence is the thing that first time I almost came unglued is when they held up the shirt with a big bloody spot on the back of it.
Oh, wow, yes. Mm. How about that 2 weeks when you were waiting for them to be caught?
No, I was crazy during that time. I was calling the FBI and everybody. I did a lot of silly things then. But not, you know, it's just I was caught up in they had to catch who did this.
Right.
And fortunately, it went quickly for us. Is one of the real hard things for some parents are, one, that they never get caught. They never know who did it,
right,
or why.
And there are a fair amount of those.
There are. And then the other thing is when they do get caught and they get off, or they get off with just a slap on the wrist. And that's hard for a lot of people to handle. And it would have been hard for me, too.
Mm-hmm. And also people who don't have a body.
Right. Yeah. You don't have, you know, you can have, I think it'd be really tough not to ever, you know, where they were.
Right. And now you must have seen some of that in Vietnam, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but we usually had something to ship on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So those are really difficult issues to deal
right.
with. How about the stress on your marriage?
It can be a real stress. And I think the loss of a child just in generically is not particularly that they were murdered. And I think it's because people grieve differently. I found it easy to talk. I needed to talk, and I would talk to anybody who wanted to listen, and a lot of people who didn't want to listen. I would just talk.
But the interesting thing is how you did compartmentalize it. When you
yeah.
were at work, you didn't want your patients
right.
to talk about it. But yeah,
and then my wife needed to be by herself for 3 years. She left every Thursday morning and went to a little cottage up in the Smoky Mountains and stayed till Sunday night by herself. She needed to get away by herself and do her grieving that way.
Boy, that's really very sensitive of you to understand that, because there are a lot of people who would think that was not functional, or
well,
she wasn't working through it, or, you know.
It was frustrating, but,
yeah.
but you know, she needed to do it that way, and I as soon as I was able to get myself together, within about 6 months, I started giving talks to people about, you know, what they could do to help people who are going through this situation.
Mm-hmm. I actually went to the schools and did talks about
you know,
accidents and things like that, and how to deal with it, because you so want people to engage, I guess
right.
it is, around it. Yeah. How about rage and desire for revenge?
I read about that and I see a lot of it in parents whose children were murdered. And just somehow, that never happened to me. I tried to work up a good rage. And really, other than just some irrational things, calling around trying to solve the crime myself that first 10 days, it was almost like I was watching myself go through all of this and just observing
yeah.
from the outside. I've yet to really become really enraged.
It's time for us to go on break, and when we get back, let's start there a little bit and talk about rage for just a minute more. But we're coming up on break, and please stay tuned. I'm Dr. Gloria, and my guest today is Dr. Richard Du, and our topic is surviving the death of a child by homicide. Please don't join our show by calling our toll-free number 1-866-369-3742. Or email me with questions or comments at gchorsley@aol.com.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Millions of people suffer from chronic pain every year. If you or someone you know are one of the millions that suffer from ongoing pain, then you need to tune into the Pain Management Strategy Hour with Dr. Peter Weisslig and Dr. Paul Leo. The doctors will discuss the problem of chronic pain in the United States and the challenges that patients and physicians face in treating pain. This interactive talk show will focus on the modern interventional techniques that are available to people who suffer from a wide variety of pain conditions. Get the direct answers to your questions from the experts. That's Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 Eastern, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
When you combine energy secrets from ancient China and the latest breakthroughs in medicinal science, you get Power Healing with Dr. Shah. Heard every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific time on Voice America Health and Wellness. Each week, Dr. Shah will bring you another step closer to the expanding world of body space medicine. You will quickly learn and appreciate how power healing is a perfect alternative to hospitals and expensive drugs. Take a step beyond modern medicine every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific time with Dr. Shah on Power Healing, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffered the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria, and my guest today is Dr. Richard Dew, whose son Brad was murdered in 1992. Dr. Dew is a physician, poet, author of Brad, We Hardly Knew You, Rachel's Cry, and Tunnel of Light, A Story of Love and Loss. Our topic for this show is surviving the death of a child by homicide. If you would like to email me about this show or upcoming shows, my email is gchorsley@aol.com. If you would like to participate in the show today, our toll-free number is 1-866-369-3742. You can get a hold of Dr. Dew's books by going on www.dewbooks.com. Well, Richard, before we had the break, we were talking about rage, and you were saying that you didn't have any rage, but I know I've seen a lot of rage with people who have been involved with homicide or suicide. Have you seen that?
Oh, yes, yes. As I said, I think I was the weird exception.
Mm-hmm. How about your wife?
I'm sure she did, but she does it very quietly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and we were talking about relationships and marriage, and you were saying that she went up to the cabin and spent time, and you spent time apart.
Right.
A bit of a time apart. How was your personal life and your sexual life at that time?
I think ours was like most people who's lost children from any reason, is just in talking with hundreds of parents at Compassionate Friends and in groups that I talk to, there seems to be almost a universal loss of interest in sex, particularly by the wife. Mm-hmm. And this can be really stressful because us guys, if you ever listen to a group of men standing around talking, is they talk about sports, the weather, and politics. But they don't really have any real intimate relationships for the most part outside of their wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then sexual intimacy is the one area of intimacy that they have, and when that's gone, I think that there's a general feeling that I didn't only lose my child, I lost my wife also.
Mm-hmm. And then also, I think, I don't know, I'm not a guy, but I think it's somewhat empowering for men too. I mean, you've lost power with having a child go, and then you, as you say, losing this relationship.
Yeah, that's the one place that I think most men feel that they don't have to put up a front, that they can just share and be a person, and
mm-hmm.
you can't do that. And so, where do you go? Where do you go to have any intimacy after that?
Yeah, I found that the thing is, it's almost sex is almost for a woman. I can forgive that point of view. It's almost like your first laugh or something. I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
a release where you actually let yourself not think about anything but sex. You know,
right?
So yeah, it's difficult.
Well, and that's what prompted me to write the novel. I'd heard so many people with this problem, and this deals with how this couple works their way through that, among other problems, too.
Oh, what a wonderful way to deal with this in a novel. So, yes, if people are thinking about this, they certainly want to get your novel from dobooks.com, and The Tunnel of Light is the name of it, and I believe it's about a doctor whose son is killed in a drunk driving accident.
His daughter's killed by a drunk driver.
Daughter killed by a drunk driver.
It's their only child.
That's great. Now, could you talk a little bit about people needing to tell their story? Because I think that's an important aspect of the Compassionate Friends. I know you said that you have talked there and gone there and the ability and what it means.
My feeling on that, for me and I think for most people, just somehow incorporating that into your mind and your life that this has happened is too much to swallow at one bite. You have to do it a little bit at a time. And I call it playing your tapes. And every time you play your tape, I think you accept a teeny bit more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think each of us has a set of number of times we have to tell our story before we can really accept the totality of it. And that takes a long time coming for a lot of people. I have a friend in our Compassionate Friends chapter who said when his son also was murdered, he said when Tommy was murdered that he would buttonhole people in the airport anywhere and tell them every detail, and it took him from 45 minutes to an hour.
Mm-hmm.
He says now he only tells a story when asked, and he can do it in 3 minutes.
Well, there are a couple of aspects of that story you're telling me now that are great. One of them is that you are actually with another man. His child was murdered, and you're talking about it, which is
right.
Kind of an amazing thing.
Yeah, he sort of took me under wing right afterwards. And one of the odd things is, what do you do when you're both working? Well, you go out to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like to go out to lunch because I didn't like to cry in a restaurant.
Right.
So he said, fine, let's stop and get some sandwiches, and we'll go down and sit by the lake and eat. So we ate lunch by the lake quite a few times.
Uh-huh. That's a good, wonderful story. So how would you suggest that people go about finding people to connect with? I know that one of the things that you've talked about a little bit is going to these victims' rights things all the time, or being with murdered people, or I know you can go on email and people are very angry and, you know, and they're talking about the legal system and how to maneuver it and how to, you know, deal with it and the rage there. But if you want to, and I'm not telling, I'm on the show, I want to say one thing. People have a right to their rage, and we're not trying to tell you here that you shouldn't have it or that you should give it up or whatever. I think what we're doing here today is trying to talk about a different direction when you're ready to take care of yourself.
Yeah, you don't want to become so, you have to deal with the system, no problem. But if you become so obsessed with it, then what happens, instead of pigeonholing the justice system, you pigeonhole your grief, and you really never move on with that. I purposely avoided all of these victims' rights groups. I never went to a meeting. I did not look into Parents of Murdered Children. I went to Compassionate Friends. This was a group of people who were just like I was. Their children were dead, and they were coping with it, and I wanted to learn how they were doing that. And this is where I met Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Tom was the fellow whose son was killed. I met him at a Compassionate Friends meeting. And I think that's one place to hook up with people that you can talk to. You usually will find someone that pretty much is on your wavelength, and then you sort of go out and do things on your own with them. But that's the best resource you have.
Now, didn't you tell me it was kind of amazing, too? You went to a meeting once, and you said, we're not going to talk about the legal system at all what happens.
This was at the national conference where so many of the workshops had degenerated into just bitch sessions about the justice system. And so there were 10 of us got together one evening for a sharing session and says, okay, we're going to talk about anything, but if you say one word about the courts, we'll cut you off. And there were lots of long silences for that meeting, but we all did much better having done that. And that's what I've patterned my workshops after since then, is how can we, given the fact that our children are dead and we're murdered, how can we go ahead and go about our healing and do our grief work ourselves?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the conference, the next conference after our next break. But right now I would like you and your poetry and your creativity are so wonderful, and I would love you to read a couple of your poems for us.
Okay, I'll be glad to. This is sort of odd. I'd never written a poem. before Brad was killed. And the first one I wrote, actually, was thinking about how suddenly our children die and how quickly a perfectly happy life can crumble, like in seconds. And the title of it is An Ordinary Day. It was just another day. No one special came. Nothing unusual happened. The evening was the same. Just an ordinary day. And then the telephone rang. From that moment on forever, everything was changed. The other one that I usually close any talks that I give with, early on I made a decision that some meaning was going to come from Brad's life. And basically I said I was going to live my life as a memorial to him. And this poem is entitled Memorial. The first line in it is the inscription on his tombstone. He lives on in those his life touched. Bronze words set upon a stone sound so simple, but imply much more. Whatever you would have done will never be. Yet perhaps you're a kinsman of him who gave Johnny his first pouch of apple seeds and caused a continent to blossom. Now I plant seeds. From the love we gave and received, from the memories of the life we shared, have come seeds of kindness, tolerance, and peace given by you to me. I will plant and gently tend them in the hard, rocky places, the dry places. And as I do, each seed I plant will be in remembrance of you.
How wonderful. Thank you so much. Lovely. Have you found that Brad's death has changed your practice or the way you relate to people?
Oh, yes. As I was a hard-charging, type A perfectionist personality who sort of made everybody else be perfect and came to be known as a jerk because of it, particularly around the hospital. And the last sharp word I ever said to a nurse was on June 6, 1992. It was just, in an instant. It becomes so apparent what's important, what's not important, and what your priorities really are. And all these things that I had been getting ulcers about for so long weren't important, so they don't bother me anymore.
Huh. And how did you do that?
I don't know.
It just happened.
I would go in and some lab work's not on the chart, and I used to just blow a fuse. But I'd go in, the lab work's not on the chart. I'd say, could you get the lab work, please? I don't know what happened, but it's just after your child dies, what else? What's important? How important are all these minor problems we have compared to that?
Right. Yeah. Puts things in perspective.
It does. It really does.
Yeah. Well, it's time for our break, and if you'd like to send me an email about this show or upcoming shows, my email is juicyhorsley@aol.com. And please stay tuned for more comments and advice from our guest, Dr. Richard Du, and to hear more about next week's topic. And Dr. Du, when we come back, Richard, I would like you to bring up anything that you would like to talk about before the show closes if we've missed any information.
Okay, be glad to.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you tired of being tired? Are you sick of sitting around while life passes you by? You can get back on track by tuning in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, for Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look. Attracting Abundance is the program that empowers you to finally break through your limiting beliefs and blocks and shows you how to succeed in all areas of your life, from improved financial abundance, health and weight problems, as well as your relationships. Don't wait another week to be joyful. Listen to Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look this Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Women, do you feel that you're too old to be active, too old to be beautiful, too old to have fun, or too old to be fabulous? Well, if that's what you think, then there's good news for you. You're wrong. Tune in to Voice America every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Aging Outside the Box, Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell. Aging Outside the Box is a fabulous, fun program that gives you every reason to feel greater than you ever have. Host Shirley Mitchell and O.E. Cruiser Small will cover phenomenal topics such as women's issues, health, diet, exercise, nutrition, faith, travel, and many other concerns for women of all ages. Feel young, feel smart, and feel fabulous by tuning in to Aging Outside the Box. Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffered the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria. And my guest today is Dr. Richard Dew, physician, poet, author of Brad We Hardly Knew You, Rachel's Cry, and The Tunnel of Light, A Story of Love and Loss. Our topic on our show today is surviving the death of a child by homicide. If you would like to email me about this show or upcoming shows, my email is gchorsley@aol.com. If you would like to get Dr. Dew's books, it is www.dewbooks.com. Well, Richard, before we ended the show, I wanted to ask you if there's anything we haven't covered yet that you'd like to talk about.
Just maybe sum up a few things for our people whose children were murdered.
Okay.
I tell people a lot of times that the road to healing does not lie through the courtroom. That's just a necessary detour. And I think people really need to do what has to be done with the justice system, but don't become so obsessed with it that they ignore their own grief work and healing. And I have a personal thing is try not to become a permanent victim. A lot of people do that. If you need counseling, get counseling. The place I found the most help was at Compassionate Friends. I went to a chapter meeting and have been going for the last 14 years. I don't need to go now. I go now to try to pay back for what I got earlier. And in time, I think that you'll find that you'll be able to focus much more on your child's life than their death. And I think we need to find ways to honor and bring meaning that life. And I think there are several ways you can do it. The simplest one, as I said, is working with compassionate friends. We hear a lot about people who say and do the wrong things. They don't do that out of meanness. They just don't know what to say. And many people can speak. So I give talks telling people, this is what you need to do, this is what you don't do. Talk to medical students, talk to nurses, talk to churches. If you can write, write books. Everybody can't write a book. But most people can talk to their local church group or their local circle of friends about what you need during this healing period. I think that the other thing that a lot of people find healing is just to write a journal. Don't write it for publication. Just write it for yourself. And writing down what you're feeling, a lot of times it'll give you a good benchmark to come back later on and see what progress you have made. One thing, I'm only impose one more poem on you if you don't mind.
That would be lovely.
But, no, there's one is... because when you lose a child, is you just think about what you lost. But I think we need to remember what we had. And you know, given the choice, how long would you have your child or not have it at all? I wrote a little poem called "Would You." To love is to risk, and with risk may come loss, and loss is full of pain. In full knowledge of this, would I want to go back and do it all over again? That we ever had you was a gift undeserved, unexpected, and unearned. an answer to prayers, a completeness and wholeness for which we had yearned. The time that we shared was the spring of my life, but I expected summer and fall. Still, if forced to choose, I'd take springtime alone than to never have known you at all.
Whoa, that's a beautiful poem. Now, I want to tell our listeners, if they want to experience more of Richard Doe, they can do it at the National Conference in Dearborn, Michigan next July. And I was assuming you'll probably be presenting there?
Most likely.
And in order to find out more about that conference, you can go on the Compassionate Friends website, and I'll give it to you at the end of the show. Richard, I wanted to ask you, I would like you to tell our listeners how it would be for them to go to a Compassionate Friends meeting. Would they have to talk? How is it for a man? And how would they get there? You know, how would that happen?
The best way to find out where the nearest chapter to you is just go to the Compassionate Friends website, and you can locate a chapter or just call them, and they'll tell you where the nearest chapter is. Going to support group, I had referred people to them forever, but I was not a support group person. And then I found out I'm not doing real well. And even for me, who knew what they were all about, it was scary. But when you go, you don't have to say a word. My wife did not say anything for the first 2 years we went. But afterwards, she would meet with a lady or two, and they became friends. They were having lunch, and she got a lot out of just seeing that many of the weird things she was doing, a lot of these other people were doing also. So normally what we do at a meeting, we introduce ourselves, we tell what happened to our child, and then people just bring up problems that they're having. And eventually, someone's going to bring up a problem that you're having, and you'll see how they dealt with it, and you might find that you can do the same thing.
Now, do you have any rituals or special events that help you to remember Brad?
Have to.
Remember him?
On Christmas Eve, we go and we take a votive candle that burns for 12 hours and light it in the cemetery. And on the day he died, we never could figure out what do you do on the day your child died. But we live up in the mountains, and Brad used to always be on me because he said, you say you're going to do things, but then you get busy at work and don't do them. Why don't you do the fun things you say you want to do? And there's a big mountain here called Mount LeConte. And we've been saying for 25 years we were going to climb it. So the third year on the anniversary of his death, I said, we're going to climb the mountain. So we went up one side of the mountain and down the other, 15 miles.
Oh, wow.
And,
yeah, you guys were in good shape.
But the thing was, is you get too, you're tired enough where you don't have time to be too sad. And when I got to the top, I could just hear Brad saying, way to go, Dad. So now every year my job is to find the hardest hike in the Smoky Mountains that we haven't done, and we do it.
Now who does it, you and your wife or do you have other kids?
Just the two of us.
Uh-huh. And how about your other children? You have other children?
I have one son.
And how's he dealt with it?
I don't know. That's been a real problem for us because Greg, for 8 or 9 years, whenever we've mentioned Brad's name, he said, I don't want to talk about that. And he would not talk to us. Now he will occasionally mention Brad's name. We can talk about Brad, and he doesn't immediately change the subject. But he has never really talked to us at any depth at all. So he's done some kind of guy had some counseling on his own, but I really don't know what all he's done and how he's managed it.
Now, how old was he when Brad was killed?
He was 22. He was a year mm-hmm. and a half older than Brad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting because I know I have three daughters and one of them doesn't talk about it.
Yeah, and you know, I think the worst thing we can do is to try to make them talk about it.
Yeah.
Because you know, when we're doing that, is I don't think it helps them. Maybe it'll make us feel more comfortable, but we're not doing it for their benefit.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's an important point here. Everything is not rosy glow and, you know, jolly golly, and you know, people still don't deal with it. Some people do, some people don't. And the important thing, I think, and the message I get from you is that you've got to find time to take care of yourself. Pat Loader made the comment, who's the head of Compassionate Friends, made the comment that grief is a selfish activity and you've got to take the time.
At some point you do, yes. I think that and you don't start trying to help everybody early on. Early on you've got to take care of yourself. It was a year and a half before I really started giving talks and started even writing the poems. I put little lines down that I might want to use later, but I couldn't do anything for about a year and a half except just concentrate on how do I get my head back together.
Mm-hmm. So now it's been 13 years for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what would you say? The first year was tough. How about the second?
Second year was pretty tough, but I could tell. I started sleeping better, so I knew that, and I could start looking to the future a little bit. And in about 2 years, I think I was pretty much back to whatever my new normal was.
Good point. New normal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. People want you to be back to normal. That's like you used to be, and that's not ever going to happen.
Right.
But I think that particularly in violent and sudden deaths, it takes a lot longer. There's a fellow named Knapp. Wrote a book that was excellent about this and did some good research, and he found that most women, just from the loss of a child, it takes about 3 to 4 years before they really get back to, you know,
their new normal,
good
mm-hmm.
level of functioning. Right, and I know my wife; it was about 6 years before she really started getting her old sparkle back and laughed and. But the thing I think that you need to carry on, though, is even though it takes a long time, we're happy. We have a good life. We're happy with it. We would like for it to have been a little different, but we have a lot of good memories, and we have made as much good come out of this as we possibly could. And it's
well, thank you. That's a wonderful note to end on. It's time to close our show, and I want to thank Dr. Richard Du for being on the show and talking about the difficult aspects of murder of a child and the hope and renewal, and we hope that you will tell your friends about this show and that you will also get a copy of Dr. Du's books. And thank you for being on, Richard. It was an honor to have you on the show, and I love knowing you.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Please tune in again next week to hear Dr. David Daniels, clinical professor, Department of Psychiatry, Stanford University, my friend, my teacher, and author of The Essential Enneagram, a 9-point personality typing system. Dr. Daniels is a bereaved parent, and he will discuss how styles of grieving differ. This show is archived on www.healthvoiceamerica.com as well as www.thecompassionatefriends.org websites. This is Dr. Gloria. Please stay tuned in again next week, Thursday at 9 Pacific, for more of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope, renewal, and support. Remember, you need not walk alone.
Thank you for joining us today on Healing the Grieving Heart. Join us again next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.